This is Sunday Drive on the VOCM Bigland FM radio network. The views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. Now here's your host for Sunday Drive, Daryl Power.
Come all you good people, I'll sing you a song about the poor people, how they get along. Good afternoon to everybody there in Radioland, right across the island portion of this province and up there in the big land of Labrador. It's time to fire up the, the 1977, what was it, a Pontiac? Forgot the name, but it was some beautiful car. Welcome to everybody tuning in. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. I hope that you are being treated like the queens that you deserve to be treated like. Hope I had the turkey, or hope you had the barbecue, or maybe you got family all around. And if you don't, you know, if your family is not around, you know they still love you. You know they're still there for you. Enjoy your day anyway. It is a special day for mothers. I lost my mother several years ago now, and think about her every day. And so if you got a mother close to you, you might as well give her an extra hug or two today, because that is really what it's all about. Well, elections are only a few days away, so that's what the place is hopping up and down about. And there's so much stuff that we're going to cover today. Just sit back and relax, get yourself a cup of tea, and I don't know. Enjoy the drive, I guess. Enjoy the drive. It is a great day for a drive out there. Tons of traffic on the road coming. Unusual for a Sunday, I would think. Unusual for a Sunday. Anyway, we are going to go right away to our first caller. Stella Circle is, boy, oh boy, it is an immense, of immense value to this city and all the work it does. And they're having a special event tomorrow night. So I've reached out to Rob McLennan. He is with Stella Circle. And we're going to talk about, the event tomorrow night and a little bit about some of the other things that they're always seem to be doing from one project to the next. Rob McLennan is on the line. How are you, Rob?
Daryl, great, thanks. And thanks for taking my call. It's lovely to be chatting with you.
Welcome to the show. Listen,
thank you very much.
Tell me about, for those who don't know, give us a little overview about what Stella Circle is all about.
Sure. Stella Circle is a leading community agency, Daryl, and we provide services to people who are experiencing great difficulties in areas of mental health, addictions, housing, employment. We help people, you know, who are marginalized, and we help help people make change in their life to experience things differently, you know, and to experience things better.
You give people a chance to earn some valuable skills and then sort of send them up back into society. Like, there's a lot of great training being done, say, at the Hungry Heart Cafe. You also have the business where there's a cleaning business, which is going gangbusters. And I guess you really give people, reinstill a confidence that they can do this. And then you sort of, you know, fly, be free. They go back out into society.
Our vision is a home, a job, and a community, hey? And when those things are present, and those examples that you gave are exactly how, you know, many of us, how we become more engaged in our society and live lives that are have meaning and are productive. So, absolutely.
Now, I'm a fan of music, and I love music, and I love choirs, and you guys are also involved with a choir called the Inclusion Choir that's particularly special. Tell us about that.
Absolutely, Daryl. The Stella Circle Inclusion Choir is now in its 12th year, and we have been making music, and when we talk about those other examples, like you mentioned, around the Hungry Heart Cafe with its training program and helping link people to employment, and our work with people, helping them identify safe, reliable housing. The Inclusion Choir is really another tool, I guess, in the toolbox that help people become more engaged. And we're a non-audition choir that creates a safe, welcoming space where people come and enjoy all the benefits that we know. You know, our culture here in Newfoundland, music is so important. But all the research shows and supports this as well, that music is psychologically, physiologically, and socially just so beneficial to people.
Now, she's probably going to shake her fist at the radio, but tell us about the director of that choir.
an inspiration, Daryl. Thank you. And I heard you chat with Rachel Cousins last week, and Helen Murphy, while absolutely humble, she is an inspiration and has been a volunteer, a force with the choir, founding member, really, and leads and puts so much into that effort on behalf of the participants and singers in the choir, and we are just inspired by her work, and this concert coming up on Wednesday the 15th is a further example of that commitment that that she has.
Rachel has written a song. I spoke with her, did speak with her last week. She's written a song for this concert, and she's taught it to the choir, and it's going to be unleashed on Wednesday. Give us the details on when and where.
It is at the D.F. Cook Recital Hall. That's at the School of Music, okay, at Memorial. It's Wednesday, 7 o'clock, Daryl, and the it's a great venue with you know, approachable parking, comfortable seats, great acoustics, and people are in for a great concert. Tickets are available at ticketpro.ca. That's ticketpro.ca. You can visit the Stella Circle Facebook page to get other details, but we're really blessed to have it'll be the world premiere of Rachel's song that she wrote for the choir called Just Sing, and we're going to be joined by the St. John's Gay Men's Chorus. It's going to be a show for sure.
I have heard about the Gay Men's Chorus. I haven't heard, I've heard a lot of great things about them, but yeah, they're supposed to be just another fantastic choir. There's so many choirs in town. I'm just discovering one. You know, every time you turn a corner, you hear about a new one, because there's something about getting a group of people together and teaching them music and letting them sing. And I'm sure that the Inclusion Choir is offering the invite to everybody in the audience to join along.
You know, American folk singer Pete Seeger said participation is what's going to save the human race, and Pete was known for encouraging that, recognizing and celebrating that energy that an audience brings to a performance. So with Rachel Cousins and her set of her own music and the songs that Helen Murphy and the Inclusion Choir have carefully selected, and again with the St. John's Gay Men's Chorus, I think folks are going to experience a concert that they absolutely can participate in and share in the performers, and I think generate a great sense of community, hey, that that goes along, as you say, with those with, particularly with choral singing, right? Singing with people, we know how beneficial that is and how enjoyable it is for both audiences and for those singing, hey.
Yeah, what's next for you guys? You always seem to be going from one project to the next.
Well, you know, it's been 12 years a labor of love, I think, and the choir's really over that time, Daryl, formed its own identity. Hey, you know, we come at this, look, everybody can sing, and that's the basic premise. It's a non-audition choir, so I think the interesting thing over the history of the choir is that at this stage in our evolution, in our development, right, we are a room of people who believe that, you know, so that identity piece, that ownership, everyone sees themselves as a singer, and I think we see ourselves as a choir, and you know, you quite rightly mentioned that choral singing is so huge, and thanks to groups like the Bruno Center for Excellence in Choral Music, we, you know, we're able to do these kinds of special projects like this. This one with the immensely talented and inspirational Rachel Cousins, who we're just loving to work with as well. So next on the horizon, we have to finish out a really busy performance season. And, you know, we'll be returning to our more typical venue, hey, where we do, we work with other, we perform at other community agency events, professional development and conferences and those sorts of things with community and government. But that's the great thing about Wednesday, hey, at D.F. Cook. At 7 o'clock, because this is a chance for maybe people who haven't heard the choir yet to come out and you know, feel the power of music and share in that with three great acts, right? With Rachel, the Gay Men's Chorus, and ourselves. You'll get to see, you know, my takeaway for thought for people who are considering coming is that you know, we'll have great collaborations on stage because the Gay Men's St. John's Gay Men's Chorus and ourselves will join together and make a larger choir, and we'll perform a song that Amelia Curran wrote called "Be the Change." We'll also unveil, it'll be the world premiere of Just Sing, the song that Rachel wrote, co-wrote with us, and that's happening as well. So, you know, I think it's a great way to spend a Wednesday evening and feel and experience the power of music, okay?
You get to do it in one of the best-sounding venues in the province, too, the D.F. Cook Recital Hall, Epmon. Rob, thanks for this. Congratulations to just a massive success of Stella Circle and everything you're involved with. You guys are basically taking over the entire Rollins Cross area.
Thanks, Daryl. Well, there, I should say that on that reflection on the Hungry Heart Cafe, which is you know, situated at Rollins Cross, the people who come to the concert on Wednesday evening will also be invited to spend some time afterwards enjoying some amazing hors d'oeuvres and sweets from that very cafe and social enterprise, the Hungry Heart. So that's a value add to the concert as well.
Great stuff, Rob. Thanks for this, bud.
All right. Thank you, Daryl.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Rob McLennan with Stella's Circle. We are going to the break. Before I do, I got to mention two people on the other side of the glass today. First of all is the guy who's taking the reins, Zach Snow, the recent recruit at VOCM, is working all the buttons today. And for the last week, I get to share the show with Raylene Mackey, and I've brought in three boxes of tissues. Three boxes. I don't know what I'm going to do. She will be taking up the VOCM Roadshow starting next week. You know what that means? Summer is around the corner. Anyway, back in a flash.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. That's 1-888-590-VOCM. Your Sunday drive continues right after this. This is Sunday Drive on the VOCM Bigland FM radio network.
The Sunday Drive with Daryl Power on VOCM is brought to you by Robothan Mackay and Marshall. Injured? Robothan Mackay and Marshall can help. Make the call today.
Welcome back to the show. The last time I spoke to this, my next guest, he was celebrating the release of an album. Folks, this day is a good day to look around you and look at where you were and be grateful for every single day, because since the release of that album, his life has taken a turn and he's been uprooted from his hometown, currently residing in Ottawa. His life has taken an interesting journey, and he and his wife are having the strength to pull their way through it with their chins up and a little bit of gratitude as well. Ken Tizard is on the line. Ken, how are you?
I'm good, boy. How you doing?
Ken, I just learned just recently this week what was happening, you know, my jaw just dropped. My heart is going out to you. Tell us what is going on in your world right now.
Well, right now I'm in Ottawa with the wife. We're staying at the hospital residence here. We're here for 6 months to a year while she has a stem cell bone marrow transplant to help with her MS. She was diagnosed just less than 5 years ago, and she's been having attack after attack. And her case is, you know, the last 18 months, she spent about 12 of them in bed. She's really losing her mobility and everything else that comes with MS. And we were fortunate enough to be chosen for this new program that they're doing. They do 8 of these procedures a year. Allison's case was so severe and aggressive that they put her into the program. So basically, yeah, they're using a bunch of different sort of chemotherapy and different therapies from, you know, leukemia treatment and a few other things combined into a new set of ingredients that's going to help to wipe out her immune system after they harvest some fresh stem cells. And then they're going to put them back in and reboot it, and just like rebooting a computer, hope the virus is gone. When it all comes back together, we'll know in about a year.
It's revolutionary stuff, isn't it?
It's insane, boy. The stuff they're doing with stem cell research for any sort of autoimmune disease and cancers and stuff like that, it's just, I think that we're on the verge of a massive turnaround in medicine with this this new new science that's happening.
It's a tricky process, too, because it's not just a matter of going in, removing the stem cells, because her health has to be, she has to have a certain level of health in order for them to do this.
Yes, it's a really weird thing, and like we asked her, you know, we were curious as to how we got into the program, and we never really did get a complete answer. But I think, because they do so much damage to the body during this process, you need to have a very good starting system. And her, being unlike myself, she's never drank in her life. She doesn't smoke. She doesn't do any drugs. She's in very, very good health. And you know, I think had she been overweight or a smoker or, you know, a drinker, she wouldn't have been considered for this program, because it's that ravaging on the body that, you know, systems start failing during it. They've been sort of at this procedure, you know, since 20 years ago when they stumbled upon it, and they've refined it now to they've got it down really, really well. The team that we're working with is amazing. But it does take a very, very resilient body to be able to put up with this. You know, I mean, even just in the last 10 days since we've got her, I've seen her go through, you know, days where she's almost normal and days where I don't even recognize who she is. You know, she's just sort of a frail little, you know, skin and bones sort of under the covers. Can't even really put a sentence together. And we're in for more of that. But this is the. I sort of been telling people it feels like we've won the most horrific lottery in the world, you know, because her MS is so bad that, you know, she's going to get this treatment, which is fantastic. I wish it was available for everybody. And you know, I'm hoping that someday it will. I mean, I'm sure it will. It's finally out of the trial stages. It is now a procedure. And I just can't believe we're doing it. It's as horrifying as all of it is. We're really, really hopeful and excited, because we didn't have any hope before. You know, the doctors were saying that all the medicine she's been having and all the treatments weren't having any effect, and they were running out of things to do. And we were just looking at, you know, being, you know, not even 50. The two of us just turned 50 recently, and you know, settling in for another 20 or 30 years of just a slow decline. And that was horrifying. So this is very hopeful.
Ken, MS is no stranger. That disease is no stranger to the people of this province. It's very prevalent, and it's a tough disease because it sort of ebbs and flows. It looks like people are showing signs of recovery and they're healthy, and then the next day it's back to, you know, really feeling the effects of the illness again.
Yes, it's an unbelievably erratic disease, and it can it can vary from, you know, having one attack every 10 years and feeling a little bit of fatigue from time to time, to having an onslaught of symptoms, everything from blindness to eating disorders and stomach disorders and loss of function, being able to use your hands and your legs and stuff. And it can be, you know, it's like it can be anyone from 0 to 100. It can just be an insane disease, and it can change the drop of a hat. It's really weird.
How does one keep your chin up and keep hopeful through all of this?
Well, it's a tough one. You know, I mean, I had Allison was diagnosed with MS when I put out my last record, No Dark, No Light, and she got the diagnosis the same month the album came out, and I had about a year's worth of touring planned that I had to cancel. So that album, you know, I didn't shelve it, but it came out, and I didn't really get to tour on it the way I wanted. And then I had a couple of years of being on the road again, feeling normal, and she was doing okay, and then she started having more attacks. And then I thought she was getting better again, and that's when I put the Ron record out in November. August through September, she was doing great. And I'm like, okay, I got time now to put this record out. I'm going to go on the road for a good solid 8 months, and, you know, I'm really proud of this record. And we put the record out in record came out December 4th, and mid-November she had another attack, was back in bed again. And I, you know, I had all these plans for touring down the States and stuff, and I just had to cancel it all once again. So it's hard to manage, you know, life outside of an illness like this, because it is so, you know, I mean, in Ottawa here, I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm tending on her hand and foot, you know, 24 hours a day. So, you know, the only thing that gives us hope is, or the only thing that gets us through it is knowing that there's something good on the other side. We can both have, you know, somewhat normal lives again, get back to doing what we both love. You know, she loves teaching. I love being out on the road touring, and we love sort of, you know, being with our kids and raising a family, and we're going to get back to all that. And we're just taking it all with a bit of humor. You know, we're very big on sharing this with everybody. You know, we've been vlogging, and we've got a real interesting social network online, and you know, we're getting hundreds of messages every day. And every night when I put her to bed, and you know, I sort of read her all the messages from my computer, which takes about a half an hour. And you know, it's great. She gets me to respond to certain people, and there's this really interesting energy happening that it's not just us; there's a whole community, both in Newfoundland and in Campbellford, but also sort of people around the world. Like I got some fans in Australia that have been following us and stuff too, and everybody just kind of comes every day. Somebody drops by and leaves little messages, and it just keeps us going. You know, it's a really interesting thing to be a part of.
Well, Ken, in all fairness, you know, she's been taking care of you for years. It's about time you gave back.
She has been taking care of me for a long time. That's any musician with a wife with a job knows that.
So it's 6 months to a year, and it's just take it just a little bit at a time and see how it goes. Why 6 months? Even if she has a procedure, I guess they just need to. It's a monitoring system that lets it take like over the next few months. Is that how it works?
Yeah, well, she's like, you know, the stem cell collection, like in order to collect her stem cells, which was, you know, the first step of the journey, she had to have chemotherapy first. And then after that, she had to do 10 days of like enzyme injections to get her bone marrow to, you know, sort of rapidly grow and stuff. So it would release stem cells. You know, so that's like a 10-day, two-week process, you know, just to get that done. And then there's a little break where she can do some recovery. And then we've got 8 more different rounds of chemo, plus all these other enzyme treatments. It just takes, it's just so hard on the body. They say that, the process itself takes about 6 months. And they say it's getting better, but there's another kind of 6 months worth of expected complications with it because it is such a ravaging, you know, process, but it's getting much better. Like, you know, the complications are getting less and less all the time. So, there's a list of about 100 to 200 complications that could happen. And I just made that number up because it seems astounding to me every time I read the literature on it. We've decided, and the doctors agree, like there's no sense getting caught up in it all. There's no sense getting caught up in all the bad that can happen until it happens. Some of it might, some of it will, some of it won't. And, you know, we're choosing to be aware, but also be kind of blissfully unaware until something happens. You know, that's the approach we're taking to it.
Well, you're embarking on a journey together, and you're there with mm-hmm. her, loving each other. So there's good coming out of this as well. I have been following
Absolutely.
Along. People can find you on Facebook as well.
Yep.
In order to follow along, there's an opportunity to donate to obviously what's an onerous year financially ahead. And I want to take opportunity to wish Mom a real happy Mother's Day. And I hope you have, I hope you come through with stop Googling and just relax and enjoy each and every moment.
That's what we're doing, boy. And I got to tell you, we're at the hospital residence right next to the hospital, and I couldn't figure out what was going on because I kept running into Newfoundlanders, and I'd be seeing people in the elevator, and I'd hear them talking. I'm like, "Where are you from?" And they're like, "Oh, we're from here." I said, "Why are there so many Newfoundlanders here?" I didn't realize that they don't do heart transplants back home in Newfoundland. So anybody that's on the heart transplant list they've got a reciprocal thing with Ottawa.
Yeah.
So this building is always full of Newfoundlanders.
Yeah.
So it's great. I mean, it's horrible that we're all here for this, but it's so nice to hear the accent.
Yeah, track down Peter. He's a great fella. He's an artist. His last name escapes me right now, but he's somewhere in that building, too, awaiting a heart transplant.
Anyway,
Peter, what's his last name? I'll find out during the commercial break. Anyway, I'll send you a text. Ken, take care of yourself.
That'd
enjoy the rest of your Mother's Day, buddy.
Thank you, man. Thanks for chatting.
Take
Cheers.
Care, bud. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
So, folks, you might want to have a look at your day. Have a little gratitude for what's going on in your world today, because that is what makes the world go around. Back in a flash.
Call now, 1-888-573-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. That's 1-888-590-VOCM. Your Sunday Drive continues right after this. This is Sunday Drive on the VOCM Bigland FM radio network.
The show, before I go start, Patty, I apologize for the Hawkins cheesy dust that might be on the keyboard, buddy. Just finishing off a bag here. This is the point in the program, usually, where I like to talk to someone from Flanker Press with some of the great books that's coming out of Flanker Press. And let me tell you, folks, this one is a doozy, probably one of the favorites that I've read. It is by Brian Callahan. Stop. Don't throw any rocks at the radio. It is called Growing Up Next to the Mental, a novel, and it is about, the title is designed to be provocative and look at mental health issues. It's a fantastic novel, and Brian Callahan, the author's on the line. Brian, how are you?
Great, Daryl. How are you?
You know how to make people look twice at a book cover.
It was not the intent. As a matter of fact, the original title was The Mental Field, which is what we called it, just like the mental. I mean, it was just the field, right? And as you know, because you've read it, it was, you know, we called it The Mental and thought nothing of it. Because back in the 70s, nobody really did yet, you know?
We are of the same vintage, so I remember it well, the way that word was bandied about. Yeah. I remember Mom looking at me and saying, Daryl, give that up, you're going to put me in the mental.
Right.
That is what it was called. But you, the story of this guy, young Wish Mooney, literally, physically grew up right next to the mental hospital at the bottom of Cowan Avenue.
Correct.
Tell us about this little guy.
Okay. By the way, just before I get into it, Peter Lewis.
Peter Lewis. Thank you. 10 points. 10 points for the West End.
Yeah, good St. Bonds boys. I grew up with his younger brother Steve was a good friend of mine. I hung out more with Steve than Peter, but I knew Peter as his older brother. Great runner, long distance runner, Telly 10 alumni winner, and all that stuff. Great runner, but look at him now, you know?
I know.
Happen, like you said, we have to appreciate every day.
Still doing well, though. He actually walked a 10K marathon in Ottawa a month ago or so.
Yeah, I think there was an interview, I'm not going to, maybe on another station,
yep.
a little while ago, and they interviewed a bunch of Newfoundlanders. It was a big documentary done on the number of Newfoundlanders that are up there at that heart awaiting heart transplants. You know? So it's quite a thing, you know? It's amazing.
It's amazing. Listen, tell us about Young Wish.
And also, shout out to Rachel Cousins.
Shout out to Rachel. There she go.
And mothers. And mothers everywhere.
And,
I got to get that out of the way.
And mothers everywhere is right. Okay. Particularly yours, because she hadn't heard enough time, I'm sure.
Good segue. So, yeah, I mean, they haven't banished me from the family yet, but then I never really specifically pointed to anyone doing anything in particular, as you know from the book. But, you know, it is. There's no question. It's very closely and loosely based on my life. So, you know, it would be in another time nonfiction, but I like to say, or I don't know if I like to say it, but the only explanation I have is if I didn't change some of the things that I changed, I'd be either out of the family and into the courts, because there's a lot of stuff there based on, you know, courts that are trials I actually covered as a journalist, where mental health was just predominantly before they had even considered a mental health course, which they have established now, thanks to guys like Peter Ralph and those people. Before that, they were, you know, paraded in just like everybody else and shuffled on down to the HMP, unless they had a week maybe or 2 weeks of an assessment at the Waterford. But for the most part, you know, they had still not really the consciousness and the seriousness of it as an illness, just like any other, you know, really serious illness had not been taken that way, you know.
When I think about the field next to it, which is always abandoned now, I mean, I've never seen anybody on that field. Meanwhile, when you were a 13-year-old boy, even though you weren't allowed on it, it was a hub of activity with games of softball, soccer, motorbikes and spotlight and what have you.
Yeah, and most of the time we were hobnobbing or sharing the field with, like, there's back in the day, there were some pretty notable, and I've had people, you know, who grew up around that time come to me and say, I know that guy that you're talking about. I know this person that you're talking about. And that's good, because it is based on them. But when it comes close to, you know, being derogatory or anything negative, you know, I come back a bit and I can change some things. I had that leeway with the fiction as opposed to nonfiction. But you're absolutely right. That field, you know, we had beautiful Bowring Park right next to it. But it's like anything, you know, you buy an infant a toy and they end up just playing with you know, the squeegee in the sink, you know, or something like that. You buy a big expensive toy. We had Byron Park there, but Mental Field was just, there was something about it, the openness of it, and we could do whatever. And it was also that little bit of renegadism where you weren't supposed to be down there, you know?
Yeah, and it was a time where, you know, that, well, although your parents could see you out the window and all that jazz, you were, we were, as kids, given a hell of a lot more freedom than kids are today. It was like, get the smell of house off you, go on out and come back when it, you know, Dad used to say, come back when you see the lights, the street lights come on, you know?
And I mean, you know, as you know, because you read it, but I mean, there was never any, you know, underlying fear or anything like that. I mean, the thought of, it just became so normalized to us living next to that institution and the characters that we just call them characters in a day that you'd see coming and going. You know, I mean, obviously there's a secure area there for the more dangerous, and one or two were mentioned in my book, but for the most part, you know, we were rubbing shoulders back and forth, and it was just part of the neighborhood, as opposed to friends that I had who lived in the East End who often just shook their heads and wondered how we didn't lock our doors at night, and we didn't.
Yeah, I know.
And we're listening to is living right next to an asylum, you know?
I kind of like to have interviews without giving any of the juicy details of the book because, like, it lets people enjoy them for themselves. One thing that I'm glad you've done is, like, when we were kids, you and I, about the same age, we said all these things with our own minds at the time that are like, jaw-dropping. And what I like about this book is you did decide to take that on, but you also took young Wish and made him go through a realization process. That
Correct. Absolutely.
That was, so his growth is like our coming of age with how we really view this mental illness today.
Absolutely. And coming from the innocence of a kid at that age who really had no biases and no expectations, the stigma had yet to really take hold, you know? It was the late 60s, late 70s, and it really hadn't, you know, the nickname, the mental, started to become a little offensive. But for the most part, you know, that's exactly what happened. And it was an awakening for me as a real person. I mean, it's based on what I've seen, you know, the osmosis of understanding the differences between normal and what's not normal and what is normal anyway. You know, I mean, who's normal? I don't know. Arguably, if you were right in the middle of the scale, you're probably not normal. You know, everybody's a little off, shall we say. But that's, you know, it's been called various things over the years. And that's why it's so hard for a lot of people to take mental health seriously, because the stigma associated, well, you just write them off as people that don't think on the same level or plane as you do, so therefore they're not normal, you know?
Yeah.
But all of those cases that I covered in court, I mean, I drew on all of that, all that knowledge. I mean, Dr. Nazar Latta, who many know as the, you know, in many of the unofficial, you know, Dr. Waterford over the years, who has done so many expert testimony in court cases, you know, the recent Ann Norris trial and over the years, decades. And I covered so many of his court cases, cases where he gave expert evidence, that after a while you really gain and grasp just a deeper understanding of, you know, not what makes everybody tick, but what can contribute to, you know, a non-normalization, if you want to say, you know?
Yeah, there's like, his realization is kind of like a humanizing of the patients within the hospital, which is great. We leave you as a 13-year-old boy, and suddenly you're 33, and you are in the court system. But what I really like about the book as well, and for people that are our age, is it's just dripping with all these St. John's references. And there's something about reading these in a book that's just like, you know, just really exciting, and it's filled with them.
It gave me, as it was coming to me, you know, there was no real template for it. A lot of it led, like, if I remembered one reference to something, it sort of became a domino effect, and that led to other remembrances of incidents that had the same similar connotation, and then that would lead to a perfect example of what I was talking about. And then it will come back to, as you said, what was one of the reviews, I think, in the Telegram a while back, said that there are many touchstones for Callahan's cohort. It was a great line, you know?
Yeah.
And she's right. It's not that I said, oh, I got to mention this because people really remember that, or, oh, I got to remember this. It's the same reason why you don't write a book to, you know, with any expectations, right? Absolutely no expectations, because it's such a subjective process. So if people like it, great. But you also got to expect that some people are going to throw it away and say, what a piece of junk. So there's no expectation. But on the other side of it, there's no realization of where normal starts, where normal ends, And it all led back to those cases that I covered and all those little references that you can make, whether it's, you know, the Village Mall when it was being built, or the first day that McDonald's opened on Tops of the Road, which, I mean, I was there. I can remember it like it was yesterday. So being there firsthand and being able to remember what I can remember and being able to translate into the words on the page and have people come up to me after and say it gave them goosebumps because they could remember the chairs that you sat in at McDonald's or the smell of the first Tim Hortons that was on Tops of the Road or, you know, any number of things, you know?
Because this, I mean, you're talking about a time where Cowan Heights was only a dream, right? I guess it was just wooded area up there then, wasn't it?
Above Topsail Road, Cowan Heights was just being developed around Fairland Street East and Barishois Street and those areas. It was just being developed. So that was the mid-70s, early 70s. And that was like a new subdivision, very much. I mean, now it jumps, you go right up to Black Marsh and beyond to the Guzhou Highway. But at the time, yeah, you're absolutely right. It was just being developed. So a lot of that stuff, you know, the Shriners was just built, I think. You know, the Shriners, the Basil Shriners there. And you know, like, the Village Mall was not even considered. It was still grassed, just a big farm, grass farmland. But Kmart was there. And then there was a store there. Sinnott's store was over on Brookfield Road, around Southside Road. And you know, so, I mean, all those little touchstones, like you said, it's really interesting when people stop me, people I haven't seen in years, and say how you didn't only mention it, but you actually framed it in a way that I could just sort of picture it and be back there. And that's the most flattering thing you can get, you know?
Yeah. Have you gotten any backlash from people who've read it and say it's disgusting that you're using all those words?
Not firsthand. And I haven't actually seen anything. To be honest, kind of surprised at that. I mean, we did get initial, you know, like anything. You know, the irony of all this, Carol, is that I used to say, well, people shouldn't judge a book by its cover. I mean, this is the epitome of that, right? You know, I mean, if you just look at it and you're offended by the term the mental and you throw it down and don't look and don't read it, well, I don't think that entitles you to criticize it. You can criticize the cover, but if you haven't read it, then, you know, where's the justification for some diatribe about, you know, how bad it is? So I haven't had anything really serious. We had a couple of calls that were passed on to me from Flanker Press in the beginning about people who didn't like the title. But then they didn't understand the premise of the book, right? Because it's all about the title. It's all about stigma. It's all about ways that may help, and I've been told it's helped people understand where stigma comes from in the beginning, instead of just saying, oh, you know, we got to stop the stigma. Well, we got to understand the genesis of it to begin with and how people are just thinking on different planes than us sometimes. And that not just sometimes, all the time. And we have to have patience and tolerance for other people's misunderstandings of things, you know, whether it's common sense, which we all know is not that common, and on from there, you know, it's just we need a deeper understanding, deeper appreciation, deeper patience for people that are not what we should or think we should consider normal.
Well, it's I love the book. I absolutely blew through it and was almost pleased to find out that we're going to continue on and get to see another chapter, because we've really left off with you as the, not the cub reporter, already the experienced reporter of 33, and I'm really looking forward to the direction where it's going. I really loved your work, and I can't wait to read the next one.
Well, I can't thank you enough for that and for this interview and VOCM, and, of course, big shout-out to Flanker Press for believing in it. But I will tell you this. You asked me, just on the last night, you asked me if I'd gotten any flack over the, you know, the general nature of it, the title. Not over that, but as you mentioned, the fact that it continues on, I've had some very close friends call me some very interesting names that could qualify for some of the words that are considered less than, you know, holy these days, but in a good-hearted sense, right? I mean, they told me I love the book, but, oh, you left me hanging, and then, you know, a few words.
Yeah, I must say, before I let you go, the scene that occurs at the Brass Rack is like, oh, my God, I've been there, lost the T-shirt. It's like,
you're not alone.
You toss out if you, because, I mean, there wasn't much to do, we're 18, 19, but, I mean, a game of pool with like a dozen pool tables, that was a perfect place to flock to, and you toss out.
Yeah, the show that was going on the side, you know, of the regulars. Absolutely.
Yep, I know. The Bucky Kings, all the characters. Thanks so much for this. I'm really looking forward to the next one, Brian. A great, great read.
Thanks, Daryl. And by the way, shout out to Ken Tizard as well. I was a huge fan of The Watchmen.
Yes.
The band that he played bass and wrote songs for. Most people know The Watchmen. But also his original stuff and what he's going through there now. Once again, leave it on that note that appreciate everything you got, right? It's easy to say because a lot of people have financial issues and stuff, but until you don't have your health, you really don't appreciate how much you should appreciate it.
Yep, and we have an extra copy of this book, and if the first caller that calls in and can name the field what it was called, they will win a copy. Thanks, Brian. I hope to see you for face-to-face sometime.
Absolutely, Daryl. Thanks so much for the time.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
What a funny book, too. Oh, my God. It is like towny heaven. Anyway, we'll back in a flash.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. That's 1-888-590-VOCM. Your Sunday drive continues right after this. This is Sunday Drive on the VOCM Bigland FM radio network.
Welcome back to the program. It's funny how sometimes I lay this show out and I don't realize how one story sort of flows seamlessly into the next, but there has been a lot of talk about mental health and addictions on this show, and my next caller is concerned with exactly the same thing. This time, we're going to look at it in young preschool children. Gary, a West Ender himself, is on the line. Gary, how are you?
Good afternoon, Daryl, and thank you so much.
What's your last name, Gary? I've forgotten it.
Beg your pardon?
What's your last name? I've forgotten it.
Gary Ball, B-A-L-L.
Gary Ball. Well, Gary, welcome to the show. You are a volunteer and a thriving volunteer with whom?
Walford Bridge Rotary Rotary Club.
And how big is that?
And they've been here for about 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm only a new member there, and we're heading into new areas, and one being mental health.
Yeah, and that's what it seems like you're taking the sort of bull by the horns on this one, and particularly we're looking at the mental health of young children. What drew you to this?
Well, if you look at the VOCM news lines during the daytime, even on May 9th, they had an item in there on bullying. And, the numbers of children that are ending up in care, 5 and 24, and we're not talking about 1 to 5, we're talking about 5 to 24. Everybody seems to forget that, if you're seeing it at age 5, well, when did it start? It started before the age of 5, I would think. And, I go back to my coaching days in hockey, and I see young kids, 4 or 5 years old, learn the skate programs, and parents lambasting them in the dressing rooms because they're not skating as good as their brother was skated before, or, various things like that. And these are items. And very, I guess, scary items. When you think about it, if you got a 2-year-old and you got a 3-year-old, and the 3-year-old seems to be, he was so good at age 2. How come you're not there? And the parent lets that persist throughout the years. This kid got an inferiority complex. Young kid got an inferiority complex.
Yeah, you touch.
Now he's either going to go one of two ways. He's going to slip into depression, or he's going to try to be the bully to overcome this. And I think it's a serious issue that we've been overlooking for too long.
But that's what I like about this idea, Gary, is that we look at, say, bullying in the schools and what have you, but within the family unit, sarcasm is a skill that's learned at a very young age. And the dynamic of families, particularly larger ones, is always at any given time one is ostracized, everyone is poking fun at everybody. Sorry, I'm just talking about my family growing up, because that's exactly the way it was. And people say, don't worry, you got to have tough skin. But you're here to tell us that we got to start calling this out, and parents need to nip it at the bud for the sake of all of the children and the whole family.
Exactly. Right now we're in a society, I call it an uncertain society disorder. You've got two parents working most of the time. You have changes in priorities because of it. You have too much social media for the young kids, and it's too easy to pass off an iPad to a kid that's 3 and 4 and 5 years old and say, listen, babysit yourself on this. Well, what do you think? What kind of messages are these kids going to take? Now, I'm concerned about that. We didn't have those items when we grew up. We grew up in a family unit, much the same as yourself. And yes, you had some little interference between parents and kids and stuff like that, but it wasn't something that was as heavy and long-lasting as it is today. Today, it seems like it keeps going on and on and on and on. And I know, Daryl, I hope you share my ideas because, you know, we are definitely looking. Our club, we'd like to do something. We certainly would like to do something. We want to put out a book that we can get out to parents and young, and a book that young kids, when they start to read at the 2, 3, 4 year age, will know how to address, say, "Mom, I don't appreciate you saying that to me," or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. You know, help them and help the parents realize you can't say, "Johnny, gee, you're some good. You're a great guy. You were a perfect hockey player. Billy, I wish you were a little bit more like Johnny."
Yeah, I know. It's about embracing the differences. And it's, you know, it's a great day. This is Mother's Day. And there's a lot of families together today, extended families. And if they're listening, I hope they get a little pause for thought that maybe when they get around at the dinner table and break out the turkey, that they don't fall into the same old joke patterns that and break the cycle, basically.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's what we need to know. We need to turn over a new leaf in the way we think about our kids and how we address the problems that face the kids today. You know, they're a lot different than we did. There's a whole new bunch of things that they have to take into consideration. If there's anybody out there who would like to help us, you know, get this book off the ground, we're going to get a book out. There's no doubt. The book is going out, and we're going to get it into daycare centers, and there's no doubt about that. And we're going to try to get it online and get as many people, in the world as wants to look at this book that can save their kids and prevent them from becoming bullies or suffer with anxiety. Like, we got one in 10 kids in 2019 are victims of bullies. I mean, that's unreal.
It is.
I can't remember it ever being like that when I was growing up.
It's a touching thought, Gary. Listen, I tell you what, keep me in the loop and how things are progressing. It's a great idea.
I will. And thank you so much for this opportunity.
Anytime, but appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. There you have it. People say, "Daryl, how come your tongue is so sharp?" I said, "Have you ever met my mother and father?" We're going to go to news. See you at the other side.
This is Sunday Drive on the VOCM Bigland FM radio network.
Here we are into the second hour of the Sunday Drive. Daryl Powers here. Zach Snow is on the other side. And Raylene Mackey is on the other side. I like this next story. You know how I always like to talk about what I call a new Newfoundland. Well, my next two guests, one is from Newfoundland, the other is from Chile. And they have taken their passion for a craft, the art of sewing, and turned it into a small business called Newborn Landers, where they're making clothing for young children. Kiri Ivany and Connie Safatle is on the line. Kiri, let's talk to you first. Is this Kiri?
Hi.
Hi, how are you doing? Let's see if I can get Connie on the line now. Connie, how are you?
Fine, and you?
Safatle is correct?
Yes, Safatle.
Listen, how are you both?
Good, excellent. How are you, Daryl?
I'm doing great. Now, I know both of you guys, and I've met you individually, but lately, whenever I see you, you seem to be going around, joined at the arms, basically. you become fast friends, and that's what it is, I guess, when you start a business, you spend an awful lot of time together. Tell us about the business.
Yes, so Newborn Lander is a baby store. It's oriented for 0 to 2 years of age. We have all handmade, high-quality, innovative products like bibs, hats, bonnets, shoes, anything like that. And we also make decor for the nursery room.
How old is it?
Connie started Newborn Lander in 2017, I think it was.
Yeah.
Connie, how long have you been living here in the province?
Well, 3 years.
And I was actually very surprised to know that although you're a person who really enjoys sewing, you're also a commercial lawyer.
Yeah.
It's a nice skill to have.
Yes. Well, I started in sewing because I tried to find products for my first baby, and it was so hard. So that's why I bought my own sewing machine. I started to make my own stuff, and that is how I started New Orleander.
And how's it been going so far?
Sorry?
How's it been going so far?
Oh, well, really well. Well, after a year, I realized I need somebody who can enjoy with me with this big and travel. So that's why I have the lucky for met Gary.
It's a great idea. And Gary, what's it been like to work with Connie?
Oh, it's been excellent. She's totally an idea person. She knows all about the babies and the innovative products, which is something I knew nothing about. It was never a business that I could foresee myself venturing into. But it's been great. And I absolutely loved the choice in fabrics that she was using, because it wasn't really cartoonish. It wasn't like the teddy bear print or the Disney princesses. It was all this fabric that appealed to me, you know, as just as a young, stylish person. So that's what got me.
Connie, it's just such a fantastic idea to come here, settle here, and suddenly go into business with someone from this province. I just love what you're doing.
Thank you. Yes, well, for me, it was really nice. And, well, met Gary, because like a newcomer, it's so hard and make connections, find opportunities. So I think Kerry is my perfect and jelly for my peanut butter.
Kerry, you're also doing a little sort of trying to raise some money now. Explain the new project that you have underway.
We are. So essentially we are campaigning for to raise some funds to grow our business. So this is under the format of an impact hub. They are it's a crowdfunding platform. So we have an event coming up called Pitch to the Puffins. So the initiative of this is it's a pay it forward sort of scenario. So we are raising money to grow our business. For us, we're asking for $10,000, and that's to invest in the equipment like industrial sewing machines and industrial cutter to get our website up and running, the next steps for our business to grow. And instead of paying this back, like, it's not a loan, it's not a donation, but essentially it's a pay it forward platform. So what happens is if people want to donate to our cause to help grow our business, at certain number points, you'll get different New Orleander products or the opportunity to donate it on your behalf. But also, as a part of the stipulation of this campaign, we actually have to put a percentage of our revenue from this growth towards a local charity community program. So for that, we've chosen the non-for-profit organization, the Refugee and Immigrant Advisory Council.
It's a wonderful idea. Obviously, you got some interest in a short time. You got some 2,000 followers on Facebook. It's New Orleanders, all one word, and that's where people can go and get all the information that they need.
Yes, indeed.
So are you only selling through the Facebook website now, or are you actually out and about in the city selling?
We have a studio and storefront here at the Kitty Vitty Village Plantation down in the Kitty Vitty Gut.
Nice.
So we're here Thursday through Sundays right now, and I think after the May 2-4 weekend now, it's going to be open Wednesday through Sunday.
Well, I mean, that place is such a hub in the summer. I hope you guys are building up your stockpile.
Yes, we're working hard.
It's just wonderful. Connie, how do you find it here in St. John's, Newfoundland? Do you like it?
Yes, well, I love it. Yes, well, for me, this experience being an entrepreneur, it is awesome. It's like make something new and hopefully provide opportunities for and more new Canadians. So yes, it's really fun, and I think like Newfoundland is really friendly and welcome at the same time for the newcomers. So,
well, you both have impeccable fashion tastes yourself, so it would make perfect sense that you'd be responsible for having the most fashionable babies kicking around this province.
I believe that.
it's a pleasure to talk to you both. People can go and find New Orleanders on Facebook, get some more information, find out some of the really interesting products that you guys are making. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Daryl.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
And let's see if I can get both of these calls off. And I can. Sorry about the dump sound. Before I go to the break, we got a call from a guy named Brian Perry who is writing a song and he wants to tell us about it. Brian, how are you?
Hey, nice to talk to you, Daryl.
Nice to talk to you, Brian.
Daryl, they're coming home here in Cornerbrook, excuse me, in 2019. Alan's playing.
Alan's playing, is it? My God, I should make the journey up myself. I lived in Cornerbrook for a year.
Okay, you come with us. I got this song. We'll get together, me and you and Alan, or Shannon Gnuck or Johnny Reed. Now, I'm going to read this off to you, okay?
Johnny Reed!
Huh?
I always, every time I hear Johnny Reed, I break into my Johnny Reed imitation. Johnny!
Okay, this would highlight the band members or the venue you're playing. Upbeat, hand clapping, waving, foot stomping. All inclusive, all ages, non-discriminate, color, creed, and religion, no politics in there, of course.
This call is right up my alley, Brian. Go for it.
Song to finish off your night. And I was telling your producer there, I basically got it inspired by it from Kanan's Just a Waving Flag. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then the other one would be Alan Jackson's Where Were You When the World Stopped Turning, that 2001 he wrote.
Yes, I remember well.
Oh, man, I get shivers every time I hear that one, eh?
Yeah, I know, and the Kanan tune, too.
I just heard a beat. My phone might be going.
Don't worry.
With a highlight, your lead guitar, bass guitar, you got some harmonies, probably a lighting spectacle to had some luster to it, three or four verses and chorus, and some spoken words for the spirit.
How long did it take you to write it, Brian?
I haven't got it wrote yet. We got to do it together. We got to get it together. I got a couple of verses, and I got the theme, and I got the name, and I got the song title. I can't let all that cat out of the bag yet. We got to get somebody together.
You got a melody or what?
Oh yes, I got. Like I said, I've been working on it a long time, buddy. So listen, what does Tom and Tom Connors, Downchild Blues Band, and Mariposa Folk Festival have in common?
I don't know, but I did see, I was at the Mariposa Folk Festival once and got to see Jackson Brown and David Lindley open for him, and it was like, oh man, spectacular.
Okay. Well, they were all promoted by Mr.
And we lost him. I think his phone died. That's okay. Brian, we're going to have to text, just give the answer to that question to Zach, will you, if you can. We are going to go to the break. Brian has got a hit song in the making, and that's the kind of calls that we can take here anytime you want. We're going to the break, back in a flash.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. That's 1-888-590-VOCM. Your Sunday drive continues right after this. This is Sunday Drive on the VOCM Bigland FM radio network.
The Sunday Drive with Daryl Power on VOCM is brought to you by Robothan Mackay and Marshall. Injured? Robothan Mackay and Marshall can help. Make the call today.
I've had a couple of wonderful conversations with the wonderful folks at the Admiralty House Museum. My next guest is probably no stranger to a lot of listeners out there. He is involved in the perfect triumvirate, I guess, of the Admiralty House Museum plus Mount Pearl, two things he loves, plus beer, which he's kind of fond of as well. There's a brand new exhibit coming up out there at the Admiralty House, and John Rich is on the line to tell us all about it. John, how are you?
I'm good, sir. That was a great description. I'm hiring you as my marketing manager, man. That was fabulous.
You know, I'd like to say that it's because of the hours I spent prepping for the intros, but they all come right off the top of my head, my friend.
Excellent to hear it.
What's your position with the Ableton House, John? How long have you been volunteering with them?
I am the chair of the board, and I have been with them since 2013.
It's
no,
a great
2012.
It's just a great little place because, it sort of embodies the spirit of the community.
It is a great little spot. The thing is, the big dirty secret, of course, is its historic name was St. John's Wireless Station, right? Because Mount Pearl didn't exist till the 50s. So we have to live with that, but that's fine. But it's been there since 1915. It was, a secret communication space, and the City of Mount Pearl restored the building about 25 years ago, and then we've turned it into a museum, and now we have another building next to it called the Annex, which is a performance and exhibit space, which is absolutely gorgeous. We've had musicians there last year. We had, oh my God, I can't remember his name. That's terrible. You know, but he's from WGB, the guitarist and the girl.
Sandy Morris. Oh, probably Reza.
Sandy Morris. Yeah.
Or Aaron Best, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't Aaron Best, no. It was Jenny Gear.
Jenny Gear. Wow.
And we did an incredible performance there at the Annex. So this Annex is also where we do our exhibits. And we've done, this will be our third exhibit now in 2 years. The first, last year was Faces of the Florizel. That commemorated the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Florizel, of course. We had another exhibit called Armistice 100, which was marked the end of World War One. That was in the fall. And this year's big exhibit is called Field to Flight. And this is celebrating the 100 years of transatlantic flight, successful transatlantic flight, because, of course, it was Alcock and Brown who flew out of Glendinning Field. I think it was they flew out of Glendinning Field. I'm sure my manager's listening to me now going, John, you're getting it wrong.
I thought it was Leicester Field, but I don't know. I could be wrong.
Yeah, Leicester Field. It could be wrong. Yeah. And, oh, my God, she's going crazy now. I know.
And then it freaks me out because Leicester Field, which I actually would consider to be Mount Pearl, was somewhere down on Black Marsh Road or something, which is even more mind-boggling.
Yes, it is. So we have exhibits celebrating that. It's a gorgeous exhibit. It does only talk about, you know, the guys who, the people who made flights, because there was multiple attempts. It was Alcock and Brown who were the first successful ones, but there were multiple attempts. But also talks about the people involved on the ground. And one of these was a lady named Margaret Carter, who was a St. John socialite. And so it follows her story as well, following around the pilots. And we got a cool little immersive thing whereby you can go in and pretend you're flying a Sopwith Campbell plane from World War One, and it's just going to be a lot of fun.
I'm just, you know, it's funny, it is the 100th anniversary, and I was thinking about, like, there was a mad race to be the first person to make this transatlantic flight, and all these planes and interesting people descended on this area of the province. And I can just imagine what a crazy time it might have been to be living in Newfoundland at the time, and suddenly there's all these, like, airplanes flying over your head.
Yeah, and you know, it wasn't always very successful either, right? There was a lot of problems. But what's really amazing is, you know, in 1901, Marconi sends the first wireless signal to Signal Hill. 18 years later, there's people flying airplanes over to Europe. It's just, you know, we look at technology today, we say, oh, my God, we got iPhones from cell phones, from regular phones, and we're amazed at how fast the technology was. But, you know, that was quite a leap in technology back then, too, right? Nobody thought flying machines would be a regular thing.
Yes, so, and the other interesting thing about this is, tell me about the special beverage that has been made for the occasion.
Okay, this is my thing. When of course, Landwash Brewery is a microbrewery opened in Mount Pearl, only a stone's throw away from the museum. They have a number of great beers, and I've been there many times. So we approached them because I knew they wanted to be involved with the community. It was Chris Conway, who was one of the top people over there, and I said, let's do a beer to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the Transatlantic Flight. He was like, yes, let's do it. And I was like, okay, fantastic. And so what he did, he got a pale ale, and he used hops from England, and he used North American, I think it was yeast, or I'm not really sure what it was, but what he made it a transatlantic flavor. So it's called Field of Flight Transatlantic Pale Ale, and we'll be launching it tomorrow night. Because tomorrow night's the opening of the exhibit. It'll be there for availability, and then they're going to can it up and put it in their store as well.
What
so
time?
I can't tell you how it is because I haven't tasted it yet.
What time? You haven't tasted it yet, so inside track, John. I would have assumed that you might have had one by now.
I know. You know what? I'm hoping to be the first one tomorrow to try this idea.
You've already got your ticket for tomorrow night, no doubt.
Oh yeah, well, there is no tickets. It's free for everybody to come.
Is it? And what time is it getting underway?
7 o'clock. 7 o'clock at Everly House. At the Annex at Everly House Museum. And of course, we've got some speakers there. Dale Jarvis is going to be emceeing the event, and it's going to be a great time.
Well, Dale should be able to regale everyone with a lot of stories about that point in our history and just how important it was.
Yeah, he's fantastic. He's great. I'm glad he's emceeing this time because I'll be drinking the beer. So probably not a good idea for me to be emceeing.
John, before I let you go, I would be remiss if I didn't toss a little bouquet out to you and Ro for arranging yet another thirsty NL Poly at Ben's last night. They're always real fun times for people who sort of know each other on Twitter, have never seen each other face-to-face, and suddenly you're like, ah, it's you. It's a perfect night. It's a night of aha moments.
It is, too. And then you get to meet some really interesting people who are doing really interesting things in the community. Like, I had a great chat with Jess Puddister yesterday about, you know, the tiny homes out in Pooch Cove. I mean, it's amazing her experience, what she's going through.
Yeah, I know. And she's a go-getter. I think she's the missing Targaryen.
she might be, right?
Yeah,
it's, and we also got Sally Hauser there. She's an NDP powerhouse from the mainland, of course, native Newfoundlander, and she was great to talk to.
She was like, it was amazing to talk to her because she had been like, she was the director of communications for the successful and the unsuccessful Rachel Notley campaign.
Yeah, she's done a lot of it.
It's just a bunch of wonderful people who gather and you know, talk a little bit of politics. But I don't know. What I like about it, John, is a bunch of people who care about the future of this province. That's probably the most interesting part of the entire evening.
And you're absolutely right. Everybody, we don't always talk about politics. When we do, there is definitely a sense of nonpartisan hope.
There is. There's no knock them down, drag them out fighting at all. It's actually communication. It's a beautiful thing. The next time it happens, I hope 5,000 people descend on the doors.
Are we too much? Too many. We'll do it at mile one.
That sounds like a plan. John,
get more people to the Growlers game.
You know what? It's the Admiralty Museum. It's the little engine that could. It's been, you know, not only a museum, but that lovely little amphitheater you got there and the special events you put on. It's a big year for Alcock and Brown, and if you want to get a head start on it, go there tomorrow night and have a look and go there. How long is it going to be open for?
It's going to be open until the end of August.
The end of August. I shall get out there and check it out myself. Thanks for this, John.
You do that.
I will.
Sir, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
John Rich, Mount Pearl Royalty. Before we go to the break, the Barry Fordham, who we've had on the show many times and had an open line many times and had a night lounge many times, is on the line to tell us about an event. Barry, how are you?
Daryl, how are you getting on there, buddy?
Long time no chat, buddy. What are you up to?
We just finished the show at the Newfoundland Sports and Outdoor Expo show at the Paradise Double Arena.
How did it go?
It went great. Our conservation group is Newfoundland Outdoor Heritage Coalition. And we also have another new group on the go now called the St. John's Longbeards, which is the first chapter of the Canadian Wild Turkey Federation here in Newfoundland and Labrador.
Oh, stop there and repeat yourself. The Canadian Wild Turkey Federation?
Yeah, that's correct.
Wild Turkey? Tell me more. Tell me more, Barry.
Absolutely. And a lot of people were intrigued by that at the show, Daryl. We started this conservation group to get a meeting with the government after the election, to discuss with them the possibility of bringing in, introducing to the province wild turkeys on the island of Newfoundland for a possible hunting opportunity in the future.
How do they do in winter?
They survive in Ontario and Manitoba, and so there's no reason why they wouldn't survive here in the winter as well.
How big did it grow, Barry?
Daryl, actually, there was a gentleman who came by today, told us that one had been harvested just over this weekend in, I believe, Ontario. It was 22 pounds dressed.
Wow. So what
that means cleaned, of course, right?
Yes.
Now, that's a rather large bird. They don't all get that big, of course.
So the idea would be to introduce them in just a certain part of the province to see how it goes, or is it a province-wide introduction? What's the game? What's the ultimate game plan?
Well, we're looking at here on the island mostly just right now, and it would probably possibly, if the government agreed, and of course they'd want an environmental impact study. Part of the thing now with this being part of the Canadian Wild Turkey Federation is now we have all kinds of resources available to us, such as professional people, such as biologists and scientists. In New Brunswick and Nova Scotia right now, the same process is ongoing with those governments. They have an environmental impact study being presented to the government, so we just borrow theirs, tailor make it to our province, and then produce that to the province, to the government, and hopefully they, with any luck, within not too long of time, they will approve the process for the introduction of the wild turkeys here. And through the Canadian Wild Turkey Federation, we would live-traft wild birds in Maine, from Maine and New Brunswick, and transfer them here.
How many do you think would be a good number to get this off the ground?
Oh, that's a good question, Daryl, and I wouldn't be able to give you an answer. It would be just a guesstimate. You know me, I like dealing with the facts.
Yeah, what about the hunting season? What's it usually scheduled for in other provinces?
Mostly, to the best of my knowledge now, Daryl, it's a spring hunt.
Yep.
Now, it may go into fall hunt, but I'm not sure, but spring hunt is most common hunt, and that's ongoing now in most provinces and in the state.
Well, a spring hunt here, if it's on the Northern Peninsula, it's a spring hunt in 9 feet of snow.
Yes, it is the pen and pen season and the weather and a host of other things, of course. But right now, we're concentrating on getting our meeting first with the government to introduce the idea, and then hopefully they will want another study, the environmental impact study, which we can produce of no problem at all. And then we'll take it from there. We're, you know me, I'm very positive, and I like to talk about the things that are, you know, that can are possible to be done. And Daryl, just a special note, about 25 years ago, this idea was brought up to the government before, and there was interest in it. There was a lot of interest. There are a lot of interest at the outdoor show. A lot of people stopped by our booth and talked to us about it and said that they'd be very interested in something like that.
I know you're big on the moose conservation, and also know you're big on teaching kids to hunt, and this sounds like a nice way to introduce kids to getting out in the woods and having some fun. Now, I got to ask you the most important question, Barry, before I let you go. Like, how is this going to impact the wild Bologna population here in the province?
Well, the wild Bologna, Daryl, it might take a bit of a beating, you know, because wild Bologna is a favorite game for turkeys, I believe.
Well, I mean, the big stick was down for $9.99 a piper, so obviously there's a fine market. The population must be extremely healthy.
Absolutely. Daryl, when you talk about the kids here, a special note, the Canadian Wild Turkey Federation also runs a program called Hoot and Shoot, and that's a program designed for youth-age kids. That takes them to an education course for the weekend, sends them down to big old fancy-dancy lodges like in Maine for a nominal cost, where they go out and learn about turkeys and then have a hunt themselves. That's a very big program. You can look at that on Google. Canadian Wild Turkey Federation, Hoot and Shoot.
Wild Turkeys Newfoundland, I love this call. Thanks for this, Barry.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Daryl. And as always, it's been a pleasure.
Let's keep in touch. Take care, bud.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Wild turkey? Oh, my God. That's going to be hard to top this. We got a couple of more callers out the other side. We'll see you out the other side of this.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. That's 1-888-590-VOCM. Your Sunday drive continues right after this. This is Sunday Drive on the VOCM Bigland FM radio network.
Yeah, I'm loving this show today, and it's rolling right along. One of the premier pianists in this province is Bill Brennan. Anyone who's been playing an instrument and performing live in this province has at one time or another been fortunate enough to play with him or been fortunate enough to have your jaw drop while you watch him perform. He is a composer. He is he's done full-on orchestrations. He's just an amazing musician, and he's also a very, very humble guy. And let me tell you something, musician and humble usually does not go together. He's got a brand new project out. He's pretty excited about it. I heard a track and I'm really excited about it, and he's on the line right now. How are you, Bill?
Good, Daryl. How are you?
Bill, before I start, I cannot understate how bloody good you are. I don't know if you get told this often enough. But
never, man. Keep it coming.
Like, you are really an amazing, tasty player, and you just are always so calm, too. You know, it's you're a treat to listen to, and I think a lot of musicians are going to learn off you. I'm going to start just throwing it out there right now before we even delve into your latest project.
Well, thank you very much. Really appreciate that.
I got a chance to hear probably my new favorite version of 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover by Paul Simon. It's a song that I've always wanted to learn myself, but, you know, Paul Simon's a bit of a bugger because he plays the hard chords.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
He really does, and he keeps moving them, and just that one song in particular is a meandering of chords that just work so well together. Tell us about this project.
Yeah, so myself and the vocalist who I work with, Andrea Cozio, have been making music for the last, 27 years off and on. And when we met in Toronto, probably, you know, Jody Richardson, but Jody and Tina's, their daughter's first birthday party is where we met in Toronto, and we became fast friends and started a band called Chesterfield Inlet. And then we worked on another number of other projects, including some stuff for Stuart McLean's Vinyl Cafe. But we've kept in it. We've kept playing music, and always wanted to. We made one record back in the mid '90s, and wanted to continue to work together. And we have. And more recently, we've done a few gigs in Toronto and also in St. John's, and we're like, we have to record. We have to record. So last June, I went up to Toronto, and we had a day in the studio and recorded most of the record, and then we realized that we wanted to have a few more up-tempo tunes, so I went back a couple of weeks later and finished the record off in terms of tracking. And it's an album of mostly reimaginings, as you kind of referred to with regard to 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover, reimagining of popular song and jazz standards. And also there's a couple of originals thrown in there. So it's been a project in the works for a long time, and something that my wife, Anna Marie, really wanted us to do, and we wanted to do, so we finally did it.
I love her voice, and you definitely had some real cats in the studio. Did you guys just record this live off the floor?
We did, yeah, live off the floor. And you may have seen that video that we did that's completely done. You know, no overdubbing, nothing. It's just live off the floor, and all in the same room.
I don't mean to bore the people who aren't really musicians out there, but the bassist's decision to hang on one note for the entire verse was just staggering. I was like, oh my god, he's still there. Oh my god, he hasn't moved yet.
I know.
You know the tension that's created by that choice. It was wild.
Exactly. That's something that I know what you mean in terms of boring the audience, but it's something that it's what we call a pedal point, where the chords change, but the bass note doesn't change, but it creates a lot of really cool tension in the music.
Yeah, it was spectacular, and a beautiful sounding instrument, beautiful playing. Where was it done? In Toronto, in the living room?
No, we recorded that in my friend's studio. Downtown, he's got a 7-foot grand, and he does a lot of commercial work. So we were able to get in when they had a quiet time, and we had a day in there. And then I went back a couple of weeks later, like I said, but down around King and Spadina.
Oh, right downtown. And listen, most people take a month or more to make an album. Lord knows, I'm taking over 12 months to make mine. So it's not very many people who can crank these out in two sessions.
Well, we had a pretty good handle on what we wanted to do, and because Daryl, you've heard the record. It's piano, bass. There's guitar on some of the tracks and vocals, so it's not an overly complicated sound, and I had all the charts done and everything was ready to go, and there was enough of a sense of, because we know each other so well, and Andrew Downey, who plays bass, and Joel Schwartz, who plays guitar, we all know one another, and we kind of have a lot of trust in one another, that there's an openness. I have charts there, but you can kind of do what you want, and we fed off one another, and there is an improvisatory element that's very, very important to the record and to the life of the sound. So, we didn't want to. We felt comfortable enough that we could capture that in a couple days.
It's amazing how you can take, say, a vocal and a melody, and then back everything out of an original recording, and then sort of start painting again and reimagining it. Because you'd mentioned the guitar, but on the track that I heard, this is not a guitar that's strumming. This is a guitar that's playing really tasty little colors, and it seems like you all are just playing. You know, it's about the vocals as much as it's about the music.
It's kind of a true sense of chamber music. We say, you know, like, where everybody has a voice, and everybody, like you referred to color. Everybody has a color or a palette of colors that they can draw on, whether that's from like where I play on the piano, or where the guitarist is forming his or her own chords. It's definitely it's the total sum of the parts that makes it special.
What's the album called?
So the album is called I'll Be Seeing You. And when Andrea and I used to play together back in the '90s and into the early 2000s, we'd end off all our concerts with that great old standard, I'll Be Seeing You. And so that's why we decided to name the record that.
What else is on the album? Can you give us a little hint about some of the other tracks?
Absolutely, yeah. So we kind of put a, we have a bit of a nod to Stevie Wonder in Tell Me Something Good. We do a couple of Carole King tunes, I Feel the Earth, and let me see, we have an original, two originals, one of mine and Andrea that we wrote together, and one of Andrea's songs. Standards like Bye Bye Blackbird, and Nature Boy, which is a great old tune that Nat King Cole used to do. So a collection of jazz standards from Broadway shows, some contemporary hits like Paul Simon, Carole King, James Taylor, and then some of our own original.
It sounds really exciting. I can't wait to hear it. And people in this St. John's are actually going to be able to get to hear it pretty soon because you're coming going to do an album release here in the town. Tell us about it.
Exactly. Yeah. So Andrew and Andrea are coming down from Toronto, and we're going to have a concert on June 3rd at the School of Music at the D.F. Cook Recital Hall at 8 p.m. And it's only $10 to get in, so it's manageable for families. That's a Monday night. And we're going to have the CD there. We're just going to have a great old time. So that's June 3rd at the School of Music, D.F. Cook Recital Hall at 8 o'clock. And everybody's welcome. Tickets are at the door.
I can't wait to hear the album. Some people have been lucky, like CBC's Tamellon has been lucky enough to hear it, actually, and said some great words about it. So any local musicians going to be joining you for that show?
No, it's just going to be the three of us.
Nice.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great.
So what is the game plan? I know you're doing a Toronto release and you're playing Rochester, but are you looking at maybe expanding this into more of a longer tour?
For sure, yeah. We've got one date next year already in Ontario, a pretty significant date in Stratford. So we're hoping that with this album and its release and some press and what have you, that we'll be well sort of positioned to get some touring on the go for next June into July across the country, and hopefully we'll play again in St. John's at the Jazz Festival or somewhere in town anyway next year. So the touring plans are definitely something that we want to move forward with, and we've got some contacts, so I think that will happen.
I wouldn't be afraid to toss your hat into the ring for the St. John's Folk Fest next year either.
Well, they might go for it. I'll talk to John Clark, see what he says.
Yeah, no, they're that's what I love about what the Newfoundland Labrador Folk Fest has become is the fact that
it is very eclectic. Isn't
the net is spreading, you know. Like, as a matter of fact, this is apropos of nothing, but the Jerry Cans are coming, and I'm like I've heard the Jerry Cans live in concert, and it was a recording, and I'm like, oh, they're from Iqaluit. They sing in Inuktitut, and they absolutely blew the doors off this room. So, you know, I mean, let's face it, if a band from Inuktitut can come to this province and sing in Inuktitut, I think there's a little bit of room for a local phenom who plays piano.
Well, I hope so. And it really is great that we're representing artists from the north, south, east, and west of our continent. So, you know, kudos to the folk festival and to the various folk and jazz and music festivals and art festivals that we have in this province.
5 million in 2021, brother. What else is on your plate this year?
Let's see. You know what? I'm about to go on the road tomorrow with a bunch of students from Memorial University. We have a group called the Mun Music 10, and it's a chamber music group that's doing some school concerts. We're going to play a public concert in Gander on Tuesday night at what is the name of the church? Saint something. I'm drawing a blank.
The crowd in Gander will find out.
Yes, they'll find out. Leslie Hewlett is, she knows all about it. Everybody knows her. She's a wonderful choir director in Gander. And so we're playing with two of her choirs. And then on Thursday night, we're at a place called The Convent, which is where Grossmorne Summer Music Festival has their headquarters. And we're playing there on Thursday. Let's see, you know, odds and ends. Music with Tuckamore Music Festival in August, and And of course, like you mentioned, the Rochester Jazz Festival on the 24th of June, and then Toronto on the 23rd of June at Hughes Room. So lots on the go.
Hughes Room, great little venue. Bill, congratulations on this this album, and I'm sure people should go. And we're, once it's released, I'm sure people can find it under Fred's, but for those who aren't in St. John's area, where could they, where might be able to get this?
Yeah, we'll probably have it up on Bandcamp, which is, I'm sure some of your, many of your listeners know, and it's an independent sort of source for being able to buy either tracks or full records. And so we also have a website which will have all that information, and the website is andreaandbill.com, so it's quite easy to remember.
andreaandbill.com, easy to find. A pleasure to talk to you. Keep me in the loop of all your projects coming up in the future, Bill.
Absolutely, Daryl. Real nice to talk to you, too.
Nice to talk to you. Great track. Can't wait to hear the rest.
Right on, man.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All the best. Bye-bye.
Ah, yes, he is a tasty, tasty, tasty player. Going to the last break of the day. When we come back, are you feeling a little peckish? You feeling in the mood for a slice? There's a guy who has turned his love of pizza into a Facebook craze with some 30,000 followers. We're going to talk pizza. We're going to talk the za. We're going to talk the slice right after this. Don't go away.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. That's 1-888-590-BOCM. Your Sunday drive continues right after this. This is Sunday Drive on the VOCM Bigland FM radio network.
The Sunday Drive with Daryl Power on VOCM is brought to you by Robothan Mackay and Marshall. Injured? Robothan Mackay and Marshall can help. Make the call today.
Who doesn't love a piece of pizza? If you don't like one slice, well, you'll like another. So many different ways to cook it, so many different ways to put toppings on it. If you don't like tomato sauce, you don't need it. If you just like cheese, you can just have cheese and dry. The most, one person who probably likes pizza more than anyone else in the province is Thomas Bishop. Thomas Bishop started a Facebook group called For the Love of Za. Some almost 30,000 people now are on that, and not only from this province, from all over the world. It's basically a site where people go to various pizza restaurants, take snaps of their pizza, and you basically just scroll down and salivate. And I was talking to Ben Murphy out there in the newsroom today about getting Thomas in, and Ben said, "For the love of Za?" He said, "Oh," that's the name of the site, by the way. It's called For the Love of Za, Z-A-A. He said, "Don't talk to me about that site." He said, "I was on it last week in the newsroom. Came across a picture of Kilbride Pizza, and the next thing you know, here we were finding out a way how we could get one, and there was one in the studio within an hour and a half." Thomas Bishop, welcome to the show.
How are you, man?
First off, you manage to eat a little bit of pizza every day and let the world know about it. How are you managing to stay so slim?
I usually take the dog out, and I go to the gym regularly. And I go for hikes.
Where did you go? Did you eat pizza today?
Not yet, but I'm about to.
Where are you going?
Big Cheese.
Where's Big Cheese?
Mount Pearl. I'm going there to pick up a couple pizzas for my girlfriend and her mom for Mother's Day.
Mother's Day pizza? I love that idea because there's no dishes.
Yeah, perfect.
I am a fan of your site. Sometimes I'll see you take... You've introduced me to the... Is it the Babino at Topsail Pizza, which is a little individual...
Topsail Road, yeah.
Topsail Road Pizzeria, the individual pizza with the little can of pop. And you are... the first time we met, you actually took me to... it was myself and Jonathan Richler. Actually, you took both of us to Kilbride Pizza just after it opened. Right. And Greg O'Leary, the principal at Beaconsfield, just after it had opened. And, I mean, that place is going gangbusters down there. What is it with you and pizza?
I don't know, man. It started, my dad was a pizza maker and my mom back in Nova Scotia pretty much. And I don't know, I've just been around pizza my whole life. He's always made homemade pizza. I actually made the group for like a joke and then it just blew up. So I just ran with it.
Can you make pizza yourself?
Yeah.
So you're a dough expert? Because, I mean, it's hard to get a good, you know, it's really hard to get a good dough.
Well, I'm no dough expert, but I'm sure I could whip one up.
Now listen, are you a fan of the frozen pizza?
Yes, man. Any pizza.
What's your favorite frozen pizza? Because recently I had one of the, it's the Dr. Ucker's Three Meat, and I couldn't believe how they turned a frozen pizza into a dough that was that light and bubbly from frozen. It was amazing.
Oh, man, this is also funny to me. I don't actually know that much about pizza, but my favorite frozen pizza is probably, I don't know, man, the old Napoli ones. Remember they used to come in like... The red package. Red
oh, you bottom. Are old school. Oh, my God. They're like, they're so skinny you could fit them under a door. I can't believe that's what you just mentioned.
Or you could put them in your toaster, turn the toaster sideways. And put them in your toaster. Not like I never did that before.
Listen, suddenly you're making me, I have a hankering for the old Napoli now because that sounds like a great idea.
Well, but each Sobeys has them, I'm pretty sure. But they're in a clear package now. They try to trick you, right?
Ah, listen, you're getting, it's amazing how many people post to that site who are, they're together with friends, they go to order a pizza somewhere, and they'll take a picture of it, and they'll give a little rating of it. It's a real, yeah. It's turned into a real interesting site.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, man, how it all ended up, and it's still going. I thought it would die, but it just keeps growing, so.
And then you'll get a post from Florida.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Right? Yeah, it really is an amazing site. It's for the love of Za. Well, like, I don't know. I talked to you on Nightline. It was a couple of years ago, and I think you might have been at 12,000. I couldn't believe you'd gotten up to 30.
Yeah, I know. Me neither, no. 30,000 pizza lovers. It's crazy, man. It's all a joke, but, yeah, it's totally how it ended up.
Do you get outside of the Avalon much to eat pizza, or mainly is it there you sort of within the Avalon area?
I don't like. It's I don't know. It's mainly in St. John's, really. A couple from Fort Mac, couple from. I had to step outside for it. Couple from Alberta. There's some Halifax posts. I don't know. It's usually all over Canada, but 90% of it is from St. John's.
Listen, before I let you go, I know. I apologize to the pizzerias that we're going to miss. Okay.
Yeah.
But give us a couple of your go tos. Free shout outs. We're doing free shout outs here.
Kilbride, 100%. Topsail Road, Venice, Big Cheese. There's a place called PJ's down in Tor Bay, man. Anywhere, man. I like them all.
I'm going to have to try Big Cheese. It's like, once again, this show turns into a Mount Pearl love-in. This is such a habit. It always is. It's like all roads lead to Mount Pearl.
Well, like, you know, if you're going for different pizzas, I'd go for pie or piatto, no sweat.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. They're the ones I like the most, but I listened just then pretty well.
You know, it's a great meal, economical, and great social fun. Thomas, thanks for this. I'll give you, when you hit 50,000, I'll give you a shout again.
No sweat, buddy.
Take care, buddy. Take care of yourself.
Take care, thanks.
Bye-bye. That's Thomas Bishop. He has a Facebook group called For the Love of Zah. And yes, folks, that takes us off the eclectic highway and back into the driveway for the end of the show. Thanks for tuning in. Once again, to all the mothers out there, happy Mother's Day. I hope someone's making pizza for you, or someone's cooking for you, and someone's taking care of you. Have a great day. Thanks to Raylene Mackey. Raylene's going to be in the car next week. Thanks to Zach Snow for working all the buttons today. Patty will be in the chair tomorrow, and he's going to have lots to talk about because Friday was off the charts, folks, off the charts. Until I see you again next Sunday, take care of yourselves. We'll talk again. Until then, God guard you, Newfoundland and Labrador.